What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. We're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. This is episode number 111. I'm Jared, here with Paul.
What up?
And today we're going to be smoking and talking all about the results of UFC 266. We're going to talk about the fact we have a new heavyweight champion in boxing. We're going to have some news outside the cage featuring John Jones, Aljamain Sterling news, and more. But first, before we dive into all that, you know what to do. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. This week, Paul and I have an exciting new strain for the show.
Yes, sir.
One Tropia Pi. This is an ultra, ultra rare strain of weed. You can Google it yourself, folks. There's very little information available. It is a mix of Tropia and an unknown strain. Tropia itself is an ultra rare strain and hard to find. It's an exotic cross of Tropicana cookies and papaya.
Y'all.
And, well, what are your thoughts on this herb? I already know them, but why don't you share them with our listening audience?
It's something else. You know, it's like one of those strains that, like, when you sniff it, it, like, smells like candy, which is kind of weird at first. But then when you try it, like, it's got to have some crazy terps in there because, like, legitimately, like, the hit tastes like sweet, too. So it's, like, it's dope.
It's very unique smelling, very unique taste.
It smells like a candy bar almost or something like that.
It
like
does. And it doesn't have, like a lot of weed, you have to really search for that smell sometimes over just the, kind of the standard marijuana smell.
Like
right?
Skunk smell, yeah.
Yeah. This weed, I don't smell any weed. I just smell this strange sweet odor.
It's weird.
It's the oddest smelling herb I've ever smelt and one of the most unique tasting as well. And
the
goddamn,
terps are real in this one.
It is fire, too. You want to talk about stony. So very, very, very high THC count on this, it must be, and really excellently grown, too. The buds are super compact.
Super dense.
You throw that in the grinder, and it's like it triples in size.
It's crazy.
Like, you think you're just going to have a bowl, and you've got a couple fat joints to roll. Mm-hmm. So real happy with this. Would encourage you all listening to check it out. If you ever come across the strain in your local dispensary, or even just one of the parents, which we can only know for now is Tropia, you should definitely check it out. You know, a lot of that has got to be coming from, I mean, Tropicana Cookies has a very strong orange taste.
Yeah, it
and
does.
Orange smell. And papaya, those two together with whatever, I mean, it could be cherry pie, or it could have nothing to do with the word pie. You know.
Yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
But whatever it is, this definitely the most unique smelling and tasting herb.
Yeah, probably the terps are real.
Yeah, for real. There's lots of herb that has that orangey flavor, but this is kind of undescribable.
Yeah, it's really
so
real different.
Let's continue smoking that, and let's fire up this joint right here, because you know what it's time for, sir? It's time for
the weekly wrap-up.
Dude, this week, we're going to be wrapping up the events of UFC 266, which was a much-anticipated event.
Yeah, and it didn't let down, I don't think, at all.
No, top to bottom, that was a pretty exciting card.
Yeah, the prelims were, like, better than, like, the last four fight nights. So let's just be honest.
Any of those preliminary fights stand out for you?
I mean, I think...
How about Jalen Turner?
Jalen Turner was ridiculous, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, I think Hooker really put on a real solid performance as well.
Dan Hooker put on a great performance against Mini Gastelum.
Yeah, Narsart Hardcore. I don't know
his
how to say
it. His name's a mouthful to say.
Yeah, so Mini Gastelum. That's what everyone calls him, so. And it's no disrespect.
No, it's not at all. He looks just like Kelvin Gastelum, only much smaller.
Yeah.
But a lot of, you know, the focus on this card was centered around the top three fights. Obviously, we had 3 5-round fights at the top of this card with 2 championship bouts with Volkanovski versus Ortega for the men's featherweight title, Valentina Shevchenko versus Lauren Murphy for her flyweight title, and then the return of Nicholas Diaz versus Robbie Lawler, the second time they're meeting, in a five-round non-main event fight. And those are clearly the draw, and I would argue that Nick Diaz was probably the main draw.
A five-round fight, yeah.
So before we get into that, is there anything else on the prelims you want to talk about or you want to dive right into?
I do want to give a little shout-out to Merab as well. He fucked freaking goddamn
Marlon Moraes.
Marlon Moraes up, man. What a comeback.
That was a bantamweight bout, which you saw Marlon come out strong.
Yeah.
I mean, he was...
He had him on his heels. He had, was close to getting a finish himself.
I thought it was imminent.
Yeah.
And then Rob somehow survives the round.
Yeah.
And then just gets the TKO in the second, yeah. Beat the ever-living crap.
Just beat the shit out of him. Just took him down and beat his head in. Like, that was crazy.
God, does weed taste good.
It was very similar. It was, like, very, like, similar to the fight he had with Cejudo, where it, like, seemed like the whole first round, it was like, holy shit, Moraes looks great. But then, like, the fatigue kicked in so quick for him as soon as he tried to finish him, you know?
This is starting to become a pattern in his fights where... Does he have conditioning issues?
I don't know if it's a conditioning issue or it's like a mental thing, you know?
I mean, you look at him, you wouldn't think he looks to be in tremendous physical shape.
But he does got a lot of weight.
They could be related to that.
He cuts a shit ton of weight.
Man, I'm gonna criticize your skills here. This is very loose, sir.
What do you mean loose?
Burning through it in like 3 seconds, and
it's because it's a smaller one. You're a hater.
My co-host had a hard time stuffing a cone. Everybody,
oh, wow.
It's a sad day.
Haters be motivators, you know.
I almost feel. Like I shouldn't tell people that. They're going to question our credentials with the cannabis. I'm just kidding. Dude, I think he does have a conditioning issue.
Ashton
on your side. Not my side.
Yeah, no, I do think it's... I don't know if it's a conditioning issue because, like, he seems to still be there, like, physically. He just, like, it seems like his will gets broken when people take him down.
It's definitely turning into a pattern that he needs to address here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reminded a little bit of Cody Garbrandt. It's not the same thing, but it seems like both of them, for different reasons, tend to just go all out at certain points of the fight and then never be able to recover from it.
Yeah,
Garbrandt, it was when he got pissed off, and then it would lead to him KO'd. And Moraes just seems to come out that way.
Like, he lands one big shot, and he just tries to finish it real quick.
But then he can't do it.
He can't finish
it. And then he's got nothing.
And he's got nothing after that.
Yeah, it's a troubling pattern for a very talented fighter. But
if he's not careful, he could do. This is a Shark Tank of a division. He could be out of this thing if he's not careful. Because what's that? 3 in a row he's lost? 2 in a row? 2 or 3?
Yeah, it's troubling in the Shark Tank of the bantamweight division, isn't it? UFC.
Yeah. Because he has a lot of talent still. And he's not too old, I don't think. But hey, hell of a win for Merab, though. Like, friggin'. Just the next step up the ladder in that division. He was ranked, what, I think 10th or something like that going into this. So we could see maybe a top 5 opponent in his next fight. Who knows what happens, you know?
One of the fights that stood out to me for a sad reason was seeing Roxanne Modafari lose again.
Oh, yeah, Talia Santos, correct?
Yeah, I mean, she was facing just a tremendous athlete. And Modafari's...
Well, we've talked about this in the past. It's just like that's kind of where she tends to run into the wall. Is like she's not technically, like, any less sound than any person coming up or in that division. No,
it's
I feel like the physicality aspect and like the speed is where she tends to, like, you know.
You have to work with what
the drop off comes at.
Roxanne Modafari is so tough and so determined and so good at martial arts that she's excelling all the way up into the UFC at the highest levels in a sport where she's, and I mean no disrespect by this at all, she's not what I would really call a natural athlete of any kind. I mean, look at the differences between her and her opponent.
Yeah.
And it's just this last fight. Like, if you saw her opponent in the street, let's just say wearing, you know, like a halter top and some sort, you'd be like, damn, there's an athlete right there. Clearly, this woman's a physical athlete.
Yeah.
If you saw Roxanne Modafari, you'd just think another person just walked by you. And I don't, again, no disrespect here. She's managed to excel despite.
Well, no, it's almost more
naturally athletic.
Yeah,
person.
It's almost more of a compliment to her because she's so, and honestly, in this fight, it wasn't even that she was like getting destroyed. She was just a step behind. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, And I mean, to her credit too, she was still in it most of the fight. It was just more, like we said, she's the kind of guy.
It's her 49th professional fight, if you count the Ultimate Fighter bouts on the show, which you should. Those were professional fights with consequences, whether or not they want to sanction them for various reasons.
She was on the Ultimate Fighter twice too, wasn't she?
I do believe so. You know, all the years she toiled away in Japan, like one of the only female fighters in the world. She's got an 18-year career. And I would like to see the UFC. I don't know how much longer she's going to keep fighting. She's just turned 39, I believe, 38. It was her birthday just a couple of days before UFC 266 as well.
Uh-huh.
And if she's not going to be around a whole lot longer, I would like to see the UFC just quit keeping her in the kind of the gatekeeper status to the top five. And why don't we give her a couple wins on the way out if that's what it's going to be? I mean, it's just my opinion. As a fan and a supporter, that's what I would like to see.
Here's the problem is you do that and she blows those people out of the water.
Which she tends to do.
She does. But then when you give her some of these prospects, she tends to beat them sometimes too. She fucking beat Macy Barber. She fucking, you know, everyone said Macy Barber. Yeah.
Yep.
She's beaten like a lot of up and coming fighters as well. So it's like, I don't know. I don't necessarily know. All I know is, I mean, she still has a chance like to still move up the ladder, in my opinion. I know this fight, like, she lost, but like, if she's still taking this serious, and I feel like she still evolves every time she fights. So
yeah, that's another amazing credit to her as a fighter. Even after 18 years in the game, she's still improving and learning technique. Like, since she went, you know, she came here to Vegas and works at a syndicate with John Wood.
Yeah.
And I mean, they've had a lot of fights together now. She's shown incredible improvement in her striking because she's always been a jiu-jitsu expert. You're right. She is good enough where she could continue to improve and do something in the division. And I'm not trying to say write her off or anything. I'm just questioning at this age and 49 fights, you just naturally wonder how much longer someone's going to keep competing.
Yeah.
But much respect to Roxanne Modafari. Congratulations on so many fights and a happy birthday. But that was it, I think, for the undercard.
Yeah.
Which there were several other interesting fights on, but there's so much to talk about with the top three fights.
Yeah, the top three fights were interesting.
Let's talk about what, to me, as a fan of the Diaz brothers, is the elephant in the room, which would be the Diaz fight. You know, for those of you listening that might not have heard, it was a rematch, 17 years in the making. Nick was out 6 years. We haven't seen him since Anderson Silva, which was a bizarre fight in and of itself. And the decision is ultimately, what, a third round TKO is what goes on the books.
Yeah.
But, dude, I hate to say this. I love the Diaz brothers. I've been a fan as long as I've been watching MMA. Mm-hmm. And I never thought I would see the day where Nick Diaz quit in an MMA fight. Because that's basically what happened. And I don't understand it. I mean, you're going to do what you're going to do. He's a grown man. It's so against the character of the Diaz brothers. Over the years, I just never thought I'd live to see a Diaz brother, like, stop and quit in the middle of a fight, which is basically what he did. I mean, a lot of the writing seems to imply that it was a TKO, which it sort of was.
Sort of was. Here's the thing is, like, there's kind of, like, two camps of thought here. You know, he did get hit with a big shot. I've seen him get up from, like, bigger shots than that, obviously. But there was, like, some people were saying he was buckled his knee or something.
I've heard this, too. Well, for those listening that might not quite understand what we're talking about, what happens is there's an exchange in the third round where Robbie lands a couple big ones. He lands a shot that sends Nick down to his knee, and then he lands another shot on his jaw, on his knee, and Nick falls back onto his back, but not from the shot necessarily, because Diaz does this several times in the fights. He goes onto his back, he puts his guard up, and he motions for Robbie to come down on the mat, just like we've seen him do in many a fight. I mean, he was doing it to an extreme in his last fight against Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
He was literally just lying down and giving the wave, and that's what he did. He gives the wave for Robbie to come down. Robbie approaches him like he's going to do it and then changes his mind and backs off, wanting Nick to stand back up, which is a smart decision, okay?
Yeah.
And then the referee comes over and tells Nick to stand up, and then Nick doesn't get up, and the referee tells him to stand up again, and Nick says no, and then he waves the fight off.
Yeah.
And then I think out of respect for Nick Diaz, most of the writing and the coverage on this has just been like, Diaz succumbed to punches in the third round. But, dude, he did what he did. That's quit. He quit. He wasn't knocked out. He was waving for Robbie to engage. And then he refused to stand up. Now, he's a grown man. He can do whatever he wants to. But as a fan, I can say what I want to, too. And I'm sorry. To me, Nick Diaz quit. And I'm just shocked. That's all I can say. That's so anti Diaz brothers mythology that I don't know what to say about
it. Well, and I do think there's some underlying shit that we don't really know about, I think is definitely going on. Because we talked a bit about this the day after. But if you look at when his fight was announced in April, what he looked like, versus what he looked like when he entered the octagon last weekend, it was two different people. Like,
see it on his
something happened. Something happened here. And he kept alluding to it during the week about like his management and how like he just, like, some weird shit happened. Like, this was never supposed to be versus Robbie. There was, like, a whole bunch of other fights that were on the table, and this is the one he didn't want, but somehow this is the one that was chosen, like, for him. And, like, all this shit like that.
And it's clearly out of shape.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, he was supposed to be at 170, and then
And he looked like he was 170 pounds in April when that shit was announced.
You can check his Instagram on his April 420 post. He is absolutely shredded. He talks about being in fight camp. He did a test cut earlier this year.
But then again, then he talked about how he saw his brother fight and it fucked him up.
Well, yeah, he came into this fight week. He says he can't make 170 suddenly. Now it's at 185. And I'm sorry, you can look at pictures. He's got a little pot belly and he's flabby.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's only...
Like
it only matters because he's known for being in shape all the time. Mm. And we just saw him on Instagram. He was fucking shredded. So clearly something happened.
Something happened.
Like either didn't
And then
give
he
a
kept
fuck.
Alluding to this shit like where he's like watched his brother get beat up by Leon. It like really fucked with his head or some shit. Which, like, I don't know. Like, Nick he's a badass, but, you know, he's gone through some shit in his life. You know what I mean? So, like,
and
he struggles, you know, like with some stuff. So, like,
well, you get older like he is. You start reflecting on things in ways that younger men don't because they don't have that much to reflect on yet.
Uh-huh.
And he's probably naturally looking at what the life of fighting seems to be doing to most people who fucking do. And, I mean, who knows what's going on in his head. I'm just saying he's at that age where a lot can be going on top of whatever else personally he might have. You know, it's an age of reflection. Maybe he doesn't want to do this shit. Maybe Robbie was tagging him up and he was just like, you know what?
Man, fuck this
shit. I'm done.
Well, and here's the thing. He also did, for what he did in the octagon, I thought it was pretty impressive for someone.
He did land 150 punches. And
he threw 400, too, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, for a guy who hadn't fought in 6 years, I mean, that's...
I'll be honest, they looked a little slower.
They were. No,
they're not slow, but slower
and that,
than...
Yeah,
Nick.
No,
but
and
again,
that comes. That comes with age, you know what I mean?
And like being out of shape.
Yeah, like all that stuff. Well, I mean, yeah, I think, yeah, maybe the out of shape thing had a little bit more to do with it, to be
and
honest.
And I'm not trying to talk shit, but at the same time, I'm not just because I'm a huge Nick Diaz fan, I'm not going to lie about what I saw
and
what I think about what I saw. So I'm not trying to denigrate, but the truth is the truth. The dude was out of shape. He didn't seem like he wanted to be there. And
he took some good shots, though, too.
He did. He said he had a 6-week training camp. Did you hear that part? Yeah, he's claiming now that he had to do all this in a 6-week training camp, which is pretty wild when you just check his Instagram. He's talking about not this fight against Nick Diaz. I mean, against Robbie Lawler, but he's talking about a fight coming up on UFC 266.
Yeah.
You know, fighting this year, et cetera.
But then telling
suddenly
you something,
he had a 6-week camp
something
and he's
happened.
Fucking out of shape and making a lot of interesting but half statements about
Shit that's going down. He like was kind of forced to fight or something.
And you notice he had nobody with him.
No, it was Joe Schilling and Nate, right?
Yeah, and when he walked out, the squad wasn't with him. Like that's never happened. Like the Diaz brothers roll deep.
Yeah,
there's always the crew, and that was a little odd. Like even the commentators mentioned that shit. They were like, we've never seen Nick without the entourage of, you know, the scrap pack, as they used to be called.
Yeah.
Now they're all kind of you know, it's not such a big deal anymore that they're not really active. But
yeah, I think Nate's really the only one who's.
I mean, for me, dude, I don't want to see Nick fight again. I don't want to see somebody participate in something they clearly don't want to participate in, especially when it's serious.
There's one fight I saw on Twitter that I would take all day long.
Who?
The fight to send them both off. Send them off into retirement. Give me Cowboy Nick Diaz.
Oh,
I saw that. I'll take that. At 170.
No, I mean, on the surface, I like the sound of that, but
you don't want to see either of them fight again, huh?
I don't have that big of a problem with Cowboy fighting. Because Cowboy seems to at least enjoy motivated what he's
Nick
doing.
At least,
Nick.
A Nick motivated did not seem, Nick.
I mean, it's fighting, dude. If you don't want to do it, what are you fucking doing? It's not like you're playing basketball and you're just not into it anymore. Like you're fighting another human being in a fucking cage.
Yeah.
You need to be on point to the best of your ability.
I agree.
It's not like you're fucking missing shots or dropping balls in the fucking game. I mean, just fucking come on. I don't want to see it personally, but that's just me. I don't think Nick's going to do it either. We've seen him twice in fucking since what?
Shit.
And at this point, he hasn't had a win again. I'm sorry, but since 2011 against BJ Penn.
He fucked BJ up, though, dog. That was a sick-ass performance.
That was a savage BJ back then, too. That wasn't BJ of today.
Yeah, so. It just hurt me to see him like lose like that.
Dude,
like,
that fight left me shook all night. Like, seriously, I love those dudes.
Man.
Like you can always count on him to bring it.
Yeah, and he did for what he was working with, like for being out of shape and everything. Yeah. He brought it back at Robbie, but you could tell that there was a different Nick because Nick wasn't himself in there. Like honestly, like he wasn't pushing forward. He wasn't like there was just no. It was like he was going through kind of like we talked about before, kind of going through the motions. Like it wasn't like. I've never really seen Nick go on his back foot and like throw off like off some defensive shit. He's usually the one pushing the pace, jabbing the shit out of people, hitting them with, you know, all like.
I don't think he moved forward more than 30 seconds. In that fight. He was constantly moving and at some points literally running from Robbie. It was crazy.
It was strange.
Well, Connor's out there talking about how great it was.
It was cool to see like two OGs of the game like get in there like. Without a doubt, that's one thing I'll take from it, but
yeah,
it wasn't like knock your socks off kind of fight. Like I watched it like three times now just to like kind of you know, kind of like I just feel like it like we were saying before, it just looked like Nick was just going through the motions, like he had to be there, like. It was something he was mandatory that he had to be at, and he didn't want to be there.
And but he sure shit wasn't going to
He didn't want to let people down at the same time type deal. Like, I don't know what was going through his head. But at the same time, he landed some pretty nice shots on Robbie. I mean, I just don't know if his punches have that same pop they necessarily had before. And Nick's always been the kind of guy to drag you to the deep water and drown you with just flurries. And
that's what I expected. When it first came out that Nick wanted to fight at 185, I thought it was because he was huge, like really super shredded and packed on a lot of muscle. I was like, damn, this dude's fucking so shredded he can't even make 170. And I'm like, god damn, okay.
Yeah.
And then to see him come out with fucking dad bod, I was like, bro, you easily could have made 170, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you're jiggly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
That kick he tried to open the fight with, too, that shit was hilarious.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, if you would have landed that and won, that would have been the most legendary shit of all time.
Indeed.
That would have been the most legendary shit ever. He just comes out, jumping switch kicks Robbie Lawler and knocks him out.
Yeah,
that would have been the most ridiculous shit ever. That kind of reminded me of, who was it, Travis Brown, when he got just fucking kicked by Fabrizio Werdum.
That shit was funny.
Oh my god, Karate Kid style, dude. But I kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But at the same time, you know, Robbie naturally that fight was for Robbie to win. He was more active. He was the one who, you know, he's been through all the camps over the years, and he's stayed in the game. And that's just what happens sometimes, you know.
This is back to back Diaz fights where I'm left like, damn, all that kind of sucked. I mean, like, Nate was
Nate was pretty good.
I feel like if Nate was less into pointing and laughing at Leon, he could have won that fight pretty easy.
Yeah.
He was right there. I mean, agree. If he didn't point and laugh and swarmed instead, that was it.
You think that's what fucked Nick's head up? You think maybe the whole idea of being like that brash in the octagon presence and Nate gave up the opportunity to finish the fight just to be that that guy, that like personality that Nick started, that fucked his head up and he's like, I can't be that guy anymore. That just gave Nate's career up. He had the opportunity to fight for the belt, but instead he wanted to be a gangster and point him out and laugh at him and slap him when he could have finished the fight.
That's an interesting thought.
That's just something that came to my head. That's the power of marijuana.
Yeah, that's what happens when we're sitting here getting high and talking about fights. But, you know, that's very interesting because I don't know how anybody can argue any differently, but that cost Nate the
that
victory
cost
there.
Nate being a the title gang, shot.
Doing the Diaz,
up.
The point and the laugh and the slap cost the victory in a crucial fight, if you want to look at it. Like, he would have got a title shot after that.
And if you watch in the crowd, Nick is going crazy when he's like telling him to finish him when he freaking lands that punch. He's like, finish him, finish him, finish him. And then Nate's like not finishing him. And he's just like, oh shit. So maybe that's something that's fucked with his head. Like,
that could be, because being the quote unquote Diaz costume.
I can say as a brother too, watching your brother in any other like combat, like sport, like wrestling growing up, I'd feel every emotion watching my brothers wrestle because, like, you know, that's like, you know, it's your blood, you know.
I don't know. I'm an only child.
I know, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like there's a different level of like, like adrenaline of like watching something you can't control as a brother, like knowing what's going on and you can see it, but you don't really know, like, you can't do anything about it. But like the wins and the losses are the highs and the lows. Like, I understand that as a, like, because that's something that Nick talked about in the Brett Okamoto thing. That every time he watched Nate get his face bloodied up, like, it hurt him more than any punch he's ever took in a fight. Mm-hmm. Because like watching that, like watching your brother go through something like that, knowing that, like, dude, I could show you how to do, you know, Nick as an older brother too, like, he's got to be the one who, like, sets the path that Nate goes towards. So that's got to be something like that is what's going on with him, because it just doesn't make any sense how in 60 days you go from, you know, not 60 days, but, you know, 4 months or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You go from in shape, motivated, ready to fight, to showing up to fight week 2 days before the fight, looking like you're like, oh, fuck this, kind of, you know, and... But that's always been his style, so you never know.
Yeah, we kind of excused it when it was happening pre-fight because that's not a thing we haven't heard before.
And then, like, he had, like, GSP in his locker room, and they were, like, high-fiving and shit. Like, that's not a Nick Diaz move ever, dude. Nick would never do that shit. I don't know.
It was a weird, weird
thing. It was a weird thing. Yeah, I think it has to do with the management shit, man.
Well... Let's move on to the co-main event, which was quite the opposite.
Yeah, just a fucking beatdown.
Which saw, you know, Valentina Shevchenko defend, I believe it was her fifth title defense against Lauren Murphy.
Yeah.
At 125 pounds. And she winds up winning by TKO at the 4 minute mark of round number 4 in what was a complete and utter dominant performance.
Yeah, just destroyed.
Once again.
Yeah. Just another one for the books for Valentina.
Yeah, she landed, 132 strikes, Valentina did, over the course of 4 rounds, 3 takedowns, and Lauren Murphy landed 19 total strikes, 11 significant, and that wasn't...
Yeah, it was just an outmatched type
situation. Yeah, I mean, she threw 100, keep in mind, it wasn't like she wasn't throwing.
Yeah.
Like, Valentina, her movement... And they Valentina, were all from the outside. 100% of her strikes were from the outside. She could never get inside on Valentina.
That's one thing. She's really good at, like, going in and out as well. That's, like, one thing. Like, Valentina's game is, like, she gets in there, gets her combos off, and gets out of there before she can get hit always. I feel like that's something she showed a lot when she fought Joanna as well. Mm-hmm. Like, her ability to not only land her shots, but to get out of the way before she gets, you know, hit is, that's the game, the name of the game, you know what I mean?
I was a little bit off. Lauren Murphy landed three body shots.
Three. Damn you.
So, Lauren Murphy's a skilled fighter.
She is, yeah.
Valentina Shevchenko is not fighting scrubs. That division is actually filled with skilled fighters. This isn't, you know, years ago with Ronda Rousey being the only one that really was, you know, super skilled in an area. Most of these women are killers.
Yeah, all these divisions are filled with very talented fighters.
Yeah. It's just Valentina Shevchenko is something incredibly special in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I think Amanda Nunes and Valentina are the only two that can give each other a run for their money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, Nunes having the win over her, but...
Nunes holds a significant size advantage over her, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
The day Nunes makes 125 would be the day she cuts off a leg.
Yeah, she'll never make 125.
And you're not going to see Valentina making 145, where Nunes, one of her belts is, would be when she got fat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just... Yeah. So she gives up a natural size advantage, and there's a lot of people that think she won the second fight. You know, I mean, she lost.
It was close.
And what, the first fight was a draw, was it? Or was it
something
like that? I can't remember. But both fights were incredibly close.
Yeah.
But Shevchenko is... She's unstoppable at 125 pounds.
Yeah.
There is nobody that can fuck with her. There's nothing she can't do.
She's a Terminator, dude.
She made a point in the Jessica Andrade battle to showcase her wrestling, because in the fight before that,
she lost her first round.
Yeah, she loses her first round, and some of it was due to the wrestling of Jennifer Maia. And so she goes out and just makes a fucking point of, like, look, boom. Everybody thinks Andrade is key to victory is wrestling, so she just gets wrestled.
Yeah, we'll wrestle her back.
And then she comes out here and it's just the complete package. I think she had 3 takedowns on 4 attempts. She had, 17? She landed 17 of 20 strikes with her, you know, kicking kicks. I mean, she's all around.
Yeah, she's a savage.
She's the Black Widow in real life.
Yeah, for real. She is a savage.
Despite the fact that she continues to dominate all of these women, I love watching her fight.
Yeah, she's got a good personality. She's really easy to sell too.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what's next. I'm gonna be watching, but I hope the UFC continues or promotes her more.
Yeah,
I don't know. They seem a little quiet on the Valentina Shevchenko dominance. Like,
well, because it's just begun. That's the thing. It's like it's not like it's come to the. It's like coming to a head like the Amanda Nunes one, where they're trying to squeeze every bit of it out before she retires.
Mm-hmm.
Like Valentina could be the champion for like possibly the next like 4 to 5 years still.
Yeah, she's young. She's got plenty of fight left in her.
Yeah.
And we've discussed it before, and as far as I know, this is still accurate. Forgive me, y'all, if it's not. But I don't believe she maintains necessarily a steady home training camp. But instead, her and
she's
her main coach are kind of like nomads that go around and study with other people and do other things all over the place, which I find fascinating as well.
Well, going a step further, for this last camp, she came out to Vegas and she was training at the PI with Brandon Moreno for the whole camp.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean...
Like sparring, like full sparring with him. I was watching it on Embedded.
I actually didn't see any of the Embedded. I've been really busy on a road trip and other things this past week with work. But I had no idea. I think that's so smart, man. I just think that's brilliant. That's really, really brilliant.
I can't believe they're making Moreno fight Figueiredo again. Just as a side note.
I think that's terrible. What is the point of that? There's other contenders. That's a division that needs to be highlighted. Something in other...
A third fight. Like, geez.
For what?
He tooled him in the second fight.
Yeah, he beat him down.
In the first fight, I thought he won, too.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that. But, you know, Dana White always wants to shit on the fucking flyweights.
They got to get more popular before they fight him.
Yeah, something. So, I don't know what's next for Valentina. Lauren Murphy says she's going to take some time off.
And understandable.
She shouldn't. I mean, I'm sure she feels terrible, but... Dude, it's like when you lose to a John Jones, or you lose to a George St. Pierre, or an Anderson Silva in his prime. It's like, okay, you lost, but it's... Dude, you lost to the best to fucking do it in that weight class, probably ever.
For sure.
And there's not much shame in that shit. I mean, there's just not. It's not like some. It's not like you're Mike Tyson and Buster Douglas type of shit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I mean, for fuck's sake, you're losing to the elite of the elite of the elite. So, hold your head high. You got there and you hung in for four rounds.
You hung in.
So seriously.
Yeah, for real, true.
I mean, damn.
It's true, though. She is, her dominance is something else. Like,
yeah. To be able to go in there and hang with a fighter like Valentina Shevchenko through three rounds is that's hard in and of itself. And I'm not trying to be fucking condescending. I'm serious.
Yeah, I feel it.
Yeah. So, well, that leaves the title fight main event, which saw the men's 145-pound featherweight Alexander Volkanovski as a champ against Brian Ortega, coming off the Ultimate Fighter season.
Yep.
A lot of excitement.
This has been, the second time it was scheduled as well. The first time Volk got COVID, and that's why they did the Ultimate Fighter season.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was some lingering concerns about his cardio after that as well. And, you know, the end result, we see a unanimous decision victory for Alexander Volkanovski and basic utter dominance.
Yeah. Some crazy moments in that fight.
Yeah, Ortega had his moments.
That third round was probably one of the most wild rounds I've seen ever.
That was the one that had multiple serious submission attempts from Brian Ortega.
And then just utter beat down level ground and pound by fucking Volkanovski at the same time.
See, we had a triangle choke and a guillotine in that round, didn't we?
Well, and also the thing is, the way the guillotine happened was Ortega rocked him with a left. And he fucking kind of stumbled, and he just grabbed him right away and locked it up. I don't know how.
Yep, and spun him around.
Yeah, and just locked it
up. Got him down, had him from behind, on his back, and in some crazy...
In a mounted guillotine.
In some crazy strength that Volkanovski possesses, he muscles out of it somehow, reverses it, and winds up pounding on his fucking head.
Yeah, it just starts fucking laying.
And the same thing with the triangle later. It looks like it's over.
Looks like it's over. Fuck. Dude, he has a triangle, then he turns it to the side, and he freaking, gets the angle on it, and then just out of nowhere, it's just out. He's just out of it. What the fuck is going on here? I mean, the triangle is kind of a little bit more believable because they were a little bit more sweaty in the, round. They had a little bit more action going on between that before. Mm-hmm. That there could have been some slippage there, but the guillotine, I have no idea. No idea how Volk got out of that. That shit was crazy.
Absolutely. Well, you can see in the stats that there was three sub attempts by Ortega. And I'm just trying to remember what the third one was. I'm not sure. Was it two guillotines? It was in another round, I do believe. It was all around the
same
time.
Yeah, I don't think
it was
that serious.
It was just shocking.
Yeah.
It was so surprising because I kept thinking it was over and Volkanovski just powers out of it. And then
just rains down shots from the freaking,
they
just made no sense.
Yeah, they had to call the doctor in the Czech Ortega at one point.
They should have stopped it in that fourth round, honestly.
His face was mangled.
He was mangled, and then they let him lay there, for the corner. They let him lay there, and they brought the, doctor over and shit. I was like, come on, bro. You can't put this guy out there another round. What the fuck? This is it was very eerily similar to when he fought Max Holloway. It was just, the same thing. Remember, we had this conversation when he fought Max. Should the corner have thrown in the towel?
Yeah.
And in this instance also, I do think they should have too. He was getting beat the fuck up, and there was no chance he was going to finish that fight in the fifth.
No, he's not going to knock out. He didn't. No, that's fantasy if you think that he's going to knock out Volkanovski in the fifth round.
Yeah, no way.
Sorry, no disrespect to Ortega. But he's in a tough position now where he's lost, to the champ twice, two different champs,
yeah.
155 for Brian Ortega. He's a fairly big dude.
Yeah, I think that's the only answer at this point, right?
He had a size advantage over Volkanovski. However, I would say Volkanovski clearly had a strength advantage.
Yeah.
But we've highlighted that on the show before, which we both strongly feel comes from the fact that at one point he was a 200-plus-pound professional rugby player.
Absolutely. And I do think one thing that is very underrated about Volk also is he also has a great camp behind him.
Yes.
Like, he's got the city kickboxing team, but then he also, his guy he brought onto the Ultimate Fighter with him, Craig Jones, who's one of, like, the top-level jiu-jitsu practitioners, like, in the world, like, trains with the Donnarumma Death Squad and everything. So he's like, the elite of the elite, and that's who Volk is training with on a day-to-day basis. Like, that's got to be huge. Like, yes. Especially for, like, when you're talking about those two big submissions where he was able to get out and, you know, he was able to just wiggle his way out. You got to think, in the practice room, there's been situations when he's rolling with Craig Jones, and he's in those kind of situations, and he was able to maybe not get out, but he felt that on a whole nother level. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. Craig's a little bit bigger, I think, than Brian Ortega, right?
I do believe think so.
He's like about 175-ish, something in that range. But he's one of the best guys in the world. So you got to think Volk has had a lot of that same, like, practice in, you know, in the gym that Brent coming into this fight, Ortega wasn't going to have necessarily something that he hadn't seen before.
I'm curious, because we often talk about how in the heavyweight division that professional football players who make the transition into professional mixed martial arts, they've spent so many years moving their against other big bodies that they have kind of an advantage there, even if they haven't been, like, wrestling before. And I wonder if rugby, of that transitions into MMA, where he just has some different
things that he's used to. I would say even more than football, rugby would transition to MMA, because in rugby you can't hit like you're in football. You don't have all the gear on. So there's definitely a lot more takedown defense and freaking, you know, stuff like that that rugby tackles would have to come in, I would think.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that. And I mean, in his punching, I mean, to further dive into some of these stats and show this this absolute dominance here, was the fact that, all right, Volkanovski landed a total of 229 strikes. 214 of those were significant strikes.
Jesus.
Yeah, so that's 15 out of 229 that were considered not a significant strike. That's amazing percentage there. And part of the reason why his face was, Ortega's face was so jacked up. While Ortega lands 88 significant strikes and total strikes 101 out of 250. You know, that's a pretty big gap. But that many significant strikes certainly is a pretty clear indication, with 146 of those coming to the head.
Yeah, and one thing I do want to bring up as well is it was Ortega who was initiating the grappling, and then it was more Volkanovski who was reversing and controlling the grappling of the fight. You know what I mean? Like, kind of a weird status. He didn't have any takedowns, but he did have 3 minutes and 51 seconds of control on top.
Right, where Ortega, who you think would be at an advantage there, has less than a minute of
less than a
time,
minute,
right?
And he had two takedowns, and so
it's very surprising.
It's weird. It's very strange. No one saw it coming, like
not like
if,
that.
Yeah, like if you would have told me Volk won the fight, I'd be like, yeah. I mean, it probably would have been a pretty vicious, like, striking display would probably have to come from him to win that fight, but for it to be from top pressure and ground and pound, I didn't see that coming at all.
No, me neither. It's a very impressive performance from the champ, who now seems to have a very underrated and not much talked about win streak going on here. That's his 20th professional win in a row. At one point, he was 3-1 as a fighter, and he is now 23-1, having made multiple defenses of his UFC title. That's very impressive.
Yeah. Super impressive.
At some point, that has to kind of be acknowledged. I mean, I never hear it talked about yet, but I'm hoping after this fight that maybe that becomes a topic of conversation here in MMA. We often talk about, say, Usman's dominance, which is well pointed out. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Nurmagomedov's, that was the big story. Now, both these other guys, Usman and Volkanovski, I mean, they have a defeat on their record, but they're both undefeated champions in the UFC.
Yeah.
Like, they've never been beat at the top levels, and they're on, like, what is Usman on, like a 15-fight win streak, 14?
Something like that.
And now we've got Volk at 20. You know, you've got guys like John Jones in there, who's undefeated, no matter what you might want to say. There's just some incredibly dominant champions and fighters in the UFC right now. And I think Volkanovski is about to get that respect put on his name.
Well, I do think the only pushback that I would give to that is those two fights with Holloway were very, 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 very close.
Those fights could have gone to Holloway, and we'd be saying the same thing, that, wow, those were close. Good win for Holloway, you know.
Yeah.
And there are certain people that, I think that's part of the reason he hasn't got the respect he deserves.
That's exactly what I was alluding to.
There's a big hunk of people that think, oh, he didn't really win that second fight. I mean, you can say it, but he's shown his dominance afterwards.
That's, yeah. I do think this last performance is kind of the cherry on top, kind of like where he's undeniable at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what's next for him.
Well, the winner of Yair Rodriguez and Max Holloway.
That's what Dana has designated as the...
Yeah, I mean, they're 1-3 in the division, so I'd imagine... I don't see anyone else getting the shot over them, you know?
I don't know if I want to see that Holloway fight again, but...
I don't know.
And I understand it from Volkanovski's point, too. I don't know why he'd want to do it a third time. Even he, no matter what he says publicly, he's got to know those are close fights back-to-back. Why you want to do it a third when you're 2-0?
Well, I do think Holloway has earned it, though, with how he showed his dominance against Cater. And if he's able to, you know, win the Yair fight, he built himself back up to the best in the division. Could fight five times, and Volk could beat him all five times. But if Max Holloway earns a title shot all five times, it's an undeniable fight that has to happen. You know what I mean?
That's true. This also puts him in a tough spot, because if he loses a third time, you're not getting a fourth fucking fight anytime. I mean, at some point,
yeah.
I mean, he may earn it, like you just said, but the UFC's not going to give it to him.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's...
I mean, I doubt these are blockbuster pay-per-views here.
Yeah.
So, no disrespect, I'm just saying. I think that wraps up UFC 266.
Mm-hmm.
Good card, though. Worth the money. And that brings us straight into the boxing breakdown. We had big action in boxing this weekend, Paul.
Yep.
I mean,
shifting of the guard.
Yeah, Alexander Joshua. Oleksandr Usyk beats Anthony Joshua to win the WBA, IBF, and WBO heavyweight titles. Nobody really expected that one either. Except me and you.
Yeah.
And I mean, the general populace.
Everyone else who actually watches boxing saw this coming.
Yeah, but the general populace was like, I don't even think this fight really made that much pay-per-view sales outside of hardcore boxing fans.
Mm-hmm.
And now people see why Usyk was the unified four-belt-holding cruiserweight champion.
Mm-hmm.
And now has definitely set himself into the Boxing Hall of Fame. I mean, he now owns 7 titles across 2 weight divisions, or owned, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
Isn't he still undefeated?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can beat Fury, though.
Well, that's the problem. There's probably a rematch clause for Joshua. But,
so?
I mean, he's also lost all of his titles, twice in his last, what, 3 fights? 4 fights?
Yeah, I think 4.
Twice in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
So.
Anthony Joshua was definitely at a crossroads in his career after losing this fight, for sure.
I mean, we saw Usyk just come out. I mean, Joshua was the bigger man here. He had a power.
It's a
what
way
you would think is a power advantage, a size advantage, and a reach advantage. And you can see that Usyk trains with Vasily Lomachenko.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has amazing movement.
Yeah.
And that technique was on display. That footwork, that technique. It was very, very impressive.
Well, and here's the thing with... One thing that Joshua tends to do that I just don't necessarily like... I don't like the whole buddy-buddy thing he does with all the guys he fights. Like, I don't know if that's just the entertainment side in me that wants to see it, but like... I just feel like every time Anthony Joshua was all buddy-buddy, letting Andy Ruiz hold all his belts, take pictures with him, he's at the weigh-ins, they're pointing at each other, number one, all this shit, and then he fucking loses. He's a no-show. I don't know about Joshua right now, man. That loss was like, that was extremely damaging to his career, I think. Because it was not some flash knockout crazy thing like the Ruiz fight was. That was a clinical beatdown.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the judges that scored it as close as they did were nuts. I mean, most independent judging that I saw across boxing articles had it around 117, 111. I mean, it was just a complete and utter dominance. I think the fourth round...
And they fucking saved his life in there, too.
So the fourth round was Joshua's, and not much after that. I mean...
They saved him in there.
And they saved him. I mean,
they rang the bell 5 seconds early when he was getting battered in the corner, about to fall over.
We rewinded a little bit, like the 12th round starts, right? And we've got Usyk very energetic, very hungry for the fight, and just, I mean, he comes right off, drops two left hands on Joshua's head. I mean, he presses him up against the ropes. Joshua tries doing shit, but he just can't hurt him, right? And he just unleashes a barrage at the end of the round. And then, like you said, 5 seconds early, they ring the bell while he's getting the shit beat out of him on the round.
Yeah.
I mean, had there been a few
very
more seconds, most
shit.
People think like he would have been stopped, and yet there actually was a few more seconds, right?
There was, yeah, technically. Shady shit. Shady boxing shit, bro. That's what happens when you watch boxing. Shit gets shady.
Yeah, because there's a big difference between him losing a decision... And
getting knocked
KO'd.
Out, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that affects money,
pay-per-view sales,
all kinds of stuff.
Purses,
the next fight in major ways,
shit like
public
that.
Perception.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know. Shit, there's people that could make like, well, maybe he got robbed. They didn't watch the fight, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're getting fucking knocked out. That's that.
Like, yeah, true.
Especially if you get knocked out by a smaller dude.
Well, he got his ears boxed off by him. Is really what happened.
He certainly did. Great. Counter lefts from Usyk. Just great everything. It was very impressive. But as you alluded to earlier, let's just put the pin in the possibility of a rematch here. And let's say Wilder loses to Fury. And that leaves Fury next for Usyk potentially.
I feel like that's a very interesting fight for Usyk because it'll be the biggest test ever, not only in magnitude, but size. You know what I mean? Like, I think, Usyk's like 6 foot, and,
I believe he's 6 foot one.
Yeah, and then,
he's very small.
6'9" is what your boy Tyson Fury's walking around at.
Yeah.
So.
6'9", and very, he's not like he's skinny and frail. No. He's very large man.
Yeah.
And at some point, size matters. As some like to say, for all of those, let me have size issues. And Fury is—he's too big. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be a hell of a fight, though. I think
he's too big, and he's also a better boxer. Usyk is a tremendous technical boxer, as we've clearly seen. I mean, you and I have been high on this guy for fucking years. We were writing about him and picking his fights back before he won the titles at cruiserweight, for Slugfest magazine. I mean, we've covered and talked about him a lot on various mediums, and so like we said earlier, it was no surprise to us that he came out and he did this again. However, I don't think he has anything to give Tyson Fury.
I don't think so,
outbox him, and he's definitely more powerful.
Yeah,
probably put him to sleep. The power behind, you know, a 280-pound
I've just never
man.
Seen it versus Usyk, though. You know, that's the thing I've never seen.
It's intriguing.
That, but yeah, like, it's very intriguing.
It's intriguing, but I see it more likely that before that happens, Joshua's going to exercise his rematch clause, and we're probably going to have some kind of hold up again.
I see a lot of dollars being left on the fucking ground level by Joshua and his team, and Wilder and his team, and Fury and his team. You know, like I just see money being left all over the ground everywhere, on all what could have been. You know what I mean? That's a huge fight that they just is not going to happen at all anymore. Probably, like I don't see any way Joshua gets enough credibility to get back to a freaking Fury fight when Fury's probably not going to be around for much longer. He's fighting maybe 2-3 more years, mm-hmm. you know.
I was a little off on Usyk's height. He is 6'3".
6'3". Oh, he comes in 6'3", at 6'9".
Yeah. He comes in at 220.
Yeah.
And Tyson Fury is not only tall but large. I mean, he's 280.
He's
not fat anymore. No. You know, he's not like a bodybuilder type like Anthony Joshua looked like, but he's a very large and powerful man.
He's a grizzly bear.
I mean, while he may not be known for his knockouts, I mean, there's only like 9 fights he's been in where he hasn't knocked the guy out.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's intriguing. I hope that that's the fight that gets made. I want to see Fury beat Wilder. I would like to see him now fight Usyk. I don't want to see Joshua get another rematch. How about you?
I feel the same way. But I do feel that a lot of money has been left behind by all parties involved.
What do you think they should do? Like, to fix that?
There's no fixing
like
it.
If you could wave a wand and make that.
There's no fixing
fixed.
It. You'd have to go back in time to fix that.
But Wilder has to take the step aside money so Joshua.
Even before that,
Fury.
Joshua should have fought Wilder like 4 years ago. Like,
so
this there's
so much. I think
so it was
the end of 2020 that killed off. Like, basically, Fury was like, "I'm not going to keep waiting for Wilder," and then scheduled a fight.
Yeah.
And then they stopped that fight, mm-hmm. and then he wins an arbitration, and then they schedule the Joshua fight. But then suddenly he doesn't win an arbitration, mm-hmm. and the arbitrator
overturns
picks Wilder.
It. Yeah.
And it's done. I think that's how it went down. It was all slightly confusing.
And then. It was supposed to happen, what was it, August 21st or something like that, and then Fury gets COVID, and we're here.
Well.
Oh, wait, no, he didn't get COVID. I think someone in Wilder's camp got COVID or some shit like that. But it, like, fucked the whole thing up. Or Fury's camp, some other, who knows. Someone got COVID, and that's why we're here.
Well. Wrapping the Joshua Usyk fight, I mean, even in the stats, backed up his movement. He was outpunched. He outlanded him 148 to 123 Usyk. The jabs are interestingly exactly the same at 52 apiece. But even on the power shots, Usyk landed 96 to Joshua 71. In every way possibly outclassed him, and basically was on the verge of knocking him out until, like you said, a little bit of questionable cheating at the end, somehow, some way.
Yeah.
That wraps the boxing breakdown this week. We do have next week, of course, we'll be talking about the aforementioned Wilder Fury fight, which is coming up on October 9th.
Yep.
Right here from Las Vegas. So I'm looking forward to that. But now it is time for news outside of the cage. Just troubling things afoot in our news outside the cage segment this week.
Yeah. Jeez.
I mean, yeah, two of the three things we want to talk about are just bummers.
But I mean, there's one. Let's start with the good, you know?
Let's do that. Why don't you tell?
So, we had some legendary people go into the UFC Hall of Fame this weekend.
Yeah, it was unusually the International Fight Week here in Vegas, which typically
usually
happens
is
in July,
but, you know.
Here we are.
Things were different for this year. Next year, we'll get back on track, bro.
So they had the Hall of Fame ceremony, and who all got in this year?
GSP, which, you know, gotta love GSP, you know, one
of
the GOATs.
Well-deserved.
Yep. And then Kevin Randleman.
Kevin Randleman, former UFC heavyweight champion, unfortunately no longer with us.
Yeah, and he's, like, someone that, like, growing up was really big, a part of, like the Nevada wrestling scene. And, like, I went to, like, tons of different camps, like, and, like, seen him coach kids and everything like that. So, like, that was, like, a pretty big hit when he passed. So, to, like, to see that, that was pretty cool, like, for, like, the UFC to do that. And I think, wasn't it, like, Mark Coleman the one who, like got the award for him or something like that?
I do believe so, yes.
But, yeah, that's...
Yeah, you've interacted with him quite a bit at the wrestling camps over the years, didn't
yeah.
you?
Well, and that's the thing is, like, when people... Like, it's always weird when people say this kind of stuff, like, when people are, like, past, but they're, like, he was, like, someone who was, like, super, like, high energy, like, you know, He's just like he was in the octagon and everything
it's,
like that.
It's
he
cliched,
was
cliched, but yeah. you're saying like he basically lit up
like
the room
lit up the room. Yeah, yeah, type deal. Yep. But like he was, yeah. So he it was really cool to see that. And then we had Mark Ratner, who's a freaking OG of the game, as far as like
the regulatory.
Oh
side.
Yeah, yes, people for non-fighter. People who don't know, he like he has set the path for what the UFC has become today, and a lot of what combat sports in Nevada has become today. You know what I mean? So it's real cool to see that guy going in for people and maybe who didn't know what he had done for him to get recognized in that way by the UFC. I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as far as mixed martial arts, we don't, there's no real Hall of Fame. All
yeah.
we have is this UFC version. And so for them to honor him for that type of thing too, I thought that was great.
Yeah. And then, we had in the fights,
yeah,
they
have different categories.
Yeah,
now they have like the
yeah.
regulatory outside of fighting, which Ratner yeah. got. Like the fighter himself who's getting in.
Yeah, that's like with GSP and Randleman.
And Randleman.
And then there's like the
A fight itself.
Yeah,
right? Like
fight itself.
A fight
so
in the Hall of
Jones,
Fame.
Jones, Gustafson won.
The light heavyweight former champion John Jones versus Alexander Gustafson, fight number one. Yeah, quite
yeah.
a fight.
I think it's still the greatest fight of all time.
Yeah, that was. That was one where we saw Jones really tested in that fourth round.
That's
and,
I think
he had the spinning elbow.
A lot of people thought he lost.
That really changed that fight for him was that spinning elbow that he landed. And yes, there are definitely John Jones fans and detractors mostly that think that he should have lost that fight in the judges' eyes.
I think it was very close, but I think Jones won.
It definitely turned on that aforementioned elbow.
Yeah,
That was a big land.
And I think one thing that Gus did that surprised Jones is just like Jones at that time was at such a level where he was so hard to like, you know, map out what he was going to do. Cause like at that time he was doing crazy shit. People just weren't doing in the octagon and making it look easy. You know what
and
I mean?
As a quick aside, this was a time when he was barely concentrating on mixed martial arts too. It was like a part-time shit as far as his training went. And he openly admitted
just wild as fuck in the
later
cage,
years though. To not taking Gustafson seriously, doing drugs, you know, doing fucking coke and weed through the training camp, and he still comes out and it was a classic fight.
Classic fight. And Gus's boxing and his ability to take Jones down. He was the first person to ever take John Jones down. Everyone was like, "Holy shit!" He just took Jones down. Like, Gus is like super underrated, and as far as like his abilities. Like, he's one of those guys who, like, is probably one of the best guys who never was champion in the UFC.
Yeah, he's almost in the same situation as Brian Ortega finds himself now, where Gustafson earned two title shots in the division against
three.
Two different champs, or three, ultimately, and then loses them all.
Squandered it all,
And that's why he's going to flirt him with heavyweight and other things, because this is at some point. Even if you earn it, the UFC's that doesn't. There's no way to earn it in the UFC. That's kind of the problem. But
yeah,
I mean, we can think fighters earn title shots, but hell of a fight though. And
greatest
it's good
fight
to see
time,
that get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So John Jones was in town.
Yeah.
For that award, and then apparently, which leads us into the next bit of this segment. For those of you unaware, John Jones was arrested early morning after the UFC Hall of Fame segment on misdemeanor battery charges and felony tampering and damage to a vehicle.
Yeah.
And then he was held at the Las Vegas Metro Police Department.
For like 12 hours.
Two hours overnight. This was early in the morning, around 4 in the morning here, and he was held until he made bail later on.
Yeah.
The next afternoon. And now his court date has been postponed until October 29th, I do believe. Don't quote me on that, but it has been postponed. And we don't really have any details outside of that.
Yeah.
So I would like to talk about this in a way that just doesn't... We don't know what happened here. And there is an interesting law in Nevada that may or may not pertain to John Jones getting arrested. But, I could be a little fuzzy on the details, but I'm no expert here on legal, and certainly not on domestic shit. But to my understanding, when the police are called in Nevada on any type of domestic violence call, like where there's been a disturbance and one of the two parties has called the police, I do believe somebody has to go to jail. Like, somebody's leaving and going to jail. And to be frank, without knowing what happened, a misdemeanor battery charge could be is a very minor sounding thing. Now, I'm not condoning any type of thing if it was done to it. You shouldn't.
But the other half of it, the damage of a vehicle.
But like, if I slightly smack your arm, that's a battery charge. I mean,
the only thing I can think of this like going is like maybe she was like locked in a car and he was hitting the car or something. Or, I don't know. Like,
if he pushed her, that could be a misdemeanor battery. If he pushed her and she ran away to the car and he smacked the car on her leaving, that could be that. Believe me, I'm not condoning any of this, but there's no way that I can see that he actually beat his fiance and got a misdemeanor battery charge.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that that's a possible thing. So I know that there's a lot of John Jones haters who immediately online want to be like, you fucking woman beater. And maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But a misdemeanor battery charge, that does not necessarily make. And perhaps we should wait till more details come out to label somebody something so aggressive as a woman beater. That's all my stance is. I'm not condoning anybody's shit. I'm just saying it seems to be a lot in life here in the social media age. People hear fucking news and they blow it up and then the truth comes out and it's not really what everybody fucking thought.
But everyone just pretends like it never came out.
But what is undeniable though is John Jones got arrested and is now facing a misdemeanor and a felony.
Yeah. How do you feel about how Dana responded to that?
Dana's a dick who doesn't like John Jones.
Like, he's like, that's why we got to keep him out of Vegas. It's like, this happens every time he comes to Vegas.
Which is a false statement. That's not true. He's never been arrested here before, has he?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, he's been arrested in Albuquerque. That's where he doesn't hang out in fucking Vegas. Everything I've known that's ever happened to him has happened in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, John Jones is a huge figure in a small town. Yeah. Is it any shocking news that his loud car gets police attention? Mm-hmm. It's fucking Albuquerque. Have you been there?
Yeah.
Cool city. It's dope. I've been there several times. Big, it is not.
Yeah, true.
Like, I didn't get Dana's statement on that, but I'm not surprised he wasn't backing Jones up.
Yeah, he's talking mad shit. Matter of fact, I think he took a chance to, like, double down because of the whole negotiation thing.
Definitely, because there's behind-the-scenes fight negotiations going on right now, and there was probably some this weekend because that Richard Schaefer dude is in town with Jones. I mean, he's the one that made a statement afterwards about it, so he's clearly here. It is disappointing.
But we'll see what happens. Like, that's just really what it comes down to. Like, there's really no judgment that can really be made until all the facts come out.
I know. I'm just not one. I don't expect fucking this pristine behavior from fighters. I just don't. I mean, I'm not saying I'm glad that he's facing these charges. It's definitely disappointing. But I'm not going to just jump on this villainy of John Jones. Like, I don't fucking care. And yes, I'll be happily watch his next fight. And unless it turns out he fucking seriously beat his girlfriend, then fuck him just like fuck Greg Hardy.
Okay? Yeah,
to be clear.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, based on these charges, it doesn't sound like a lot happened, but we'll see.
Yeah.
And I'll withhold judgment until then. But Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah.
Right?
Another one.
How many times is this guy going to fucking make it the wrong headline?
Yeah. Forever.
Damn, you can't.
That's his game. Oh, I'm just kidding. I don't want to. I hate this. I hate it because I love John Jones, dude. It makes me so mad.
I don't know, dude. It's just, what a terrible thing to get arrested for, even as a misdemeanor. Yeah. I mean, do we know that it's against his girlfriend? Is that a proven thing? Or is it just a charge of misdemeanor battery and people are assuming?
No, it's a domestic violence, so misdemeanor.
I don't know.
So who knows?
We'll see. What a disappointment, though.
So more disappointing news as well. Aljamain Sterling is now out of his fight against Petr Yan at the end of the year.
It was an important fight for the bantamweight division. I mean, you know, to refresh everybody's mind, Sterling won that title on a disqualification in the first fight against Petr Yan. When Yan throws this massive illegal knee, Sterling can't continue, which we've already discussed was legit. Yeah. This fight was needed. Sterling had neck surgery, a pretty big one, which kept him out since then. And what was his reasoning that you're aware of for
this
fight?
He's saying that the nerve isn't 100% like back to like what he would say like competing level. Like it still bothers him like when he's training and everything like that. So I don't blame him. I would take as much time as needed. I do think if he is out of this fight, I guess the interim title makes sense against maybe someone like a TJ Dillashaw, but then TJ just had knee surgery too, so.
And for those of you that may think that that sounds like an excuse, I mean, I currently have 5 protruding and bulging discs in my neck, and I've got 2 pinched nerves in C7 and C8 that are, as of right this exact second, making my pinky finger on my right hand numb and tingly, like as I touch it, and cause arm pain and all kinds of shit.
Uh-huh.
And like, if I was a professional fighter who had to punch people with my right hand, that's a fucking issue, even if there's no pain. Like, I don't have incredible amounts of pain right now. Mm-hmm. However, I'm definitely diminished in my fucking right arm. Like, it's clear.
Yeah.
Like, and if I had to go punch people in the face for a living, I'm lucky that there's not pain associated with it right now.
Yeah.
And so, Aljamain Sterling, I mean, nerve issues in your neck lead to problems in your arms.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just, oh, my neck is a little sore or something. Like, no, that can fuck your arms up. And go try to hold a fight when your fucking right arm is at 50% because of a pinched nerve in your neck.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying I think it makes all the sense in the world for him to take as much time as he's needed. But I do think the division has to, there has to be someone with the holding a belt that's fighting, because there's too many contenders in the division for us to continue to hold it up.
And this is a legit reason to create an interim belt.
Yeah.
The champion is injured,
actually injured,
with an unspecified recovery time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yes.
This would be the one.
We often critique
UFC.
The interim.
This is the one. If you don't do it for this one, you're dumb.
Could you imagine? They make the Ngannou interim title belt for Gon to win, but then they don't do one here for some reason you actually need one. That's what I expect to happen. So who should Jan fight for aforementioned interim title? Because obviously it's going to be Petr Yan.
Yeah, maybe someone like a Rob Font. Because Dillashaw can't go. Dillashaw can't go. Freaking, you got Sandhagen's coming off a loss to Dillashaw. You got... Who else is up there? Who would be four?
You got
four
Marlon
is Rob
Font. Lost. Yeah, and Marlon was 5, wasn't he, or 6, and he just lost. So I guess it would be like a Rob Font type.
Yeah.
It's not as crazy as it first sounded. He's been on a
Cody Garbrandt just lost. Like,
and he's going to flyweight anyways. He's
to gone. Rob Font. So Rob Font's coming off a win. I think that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Font yawn for the interim title.
Yeah.
Do it, UFC.
Do it.
Do it. Do it now.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to a division.
Me too.
It would have been TJ had he not just gotten knee surgery.
Yeah, TJ would earn that shit, but his knee's fucked up. He can't go. So there you go. Rob Font it is. Let's keep our fingers crossed that the UFC actually makes an intelligent interim title here. And with that bit of wishful thinking, that wraps our episode 111. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you're brand new to the show, you can find us everywhere where podcasts are found, from Spotify to Amazon to Google and everything in between. Plus, we're on the radio, KLVM, on Tuesdays at 3:30 p.m. You can find that at klvm.com. All that information located in one other handy spot.
Spotmade.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, buy a t-shirt, and support the podcast.
Thanks, everybody.